Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. As you know, we are injury attorneys, and also, as you know, we bring the show to you so we can talk law on any legal subject, even though we're injury attorneys. We'd be glad to do it. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. We're going to be glad to talk to you about any legal subject. Doesn't matter if it's landlord-tenant, estates, wills. We'll get you to the right attorney. If we can't solve your problem for you, we try to solve it first. And no, we don't get any fee to do this. We don't get any fee from attorneys for referrals. We just try to get you to the right place to help you and give you the information to help you. That's why we call this Law Talk, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. And don't forget today at 10 o'clock on KOA 850 AM for a 1 hour, 10 to 11, 1 hour show. That is our injury show. We do an injury show every Saturday morning. Today we're talking about legal game plan. You need to have a strategy. You need to have strategies to win your injury claim. You can't just guess. You can't hope. You can't wonder. And you can't wander through this insurance maze and try to navigate it successfully. So every Saturday morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, KOA 850 AM, we're glad to do that. So today we're talking about a little bit about insurance, to do the right thing, how to get prepared. You know, we've written a book on the Definitive Guideline in Colorado Car Insurance. You can find a copy of our book at championsofthepeople.com. That's our website, championsofthepeople.com. Brad, let's talk a little bit about MedPay. I don't think people understand the full import of MedPay, and it's automatic under Colorado law.
Yeah, it sure is, and it's important for everybody to know. And by the way, for everybody, Gary, you're up in Steamboat. Bob Leonard's here in studio with me. So welcome, Bob.
Thanks.
And so, you know, MedPay is an essential part of your insurance. It was put in there of your car insurance, and you need to pay attention to MedPay. You need to get the MedPay, and you need to get as much as you can, because MedPay is a primary insurance coverage. It takes care of your medical bills for you. It takes care of your medical bills for your loved ones. It takes care of your medical bills for people, regardless of fault in the crash. And it's the first thing that steps in and makes sure your medical bills get paid. When you recover it back from the responsible party, you don't have to give it back to the insurance company. You get to put it in your pocket. It's something you pay for, you buy, it's a benefit. It's got great reasons for you to want to get that insurance. And so, you know, it's something you should be getting, and you need to be getting at all times.
We talk about this all the time because people come into our office and we go through, we give you the initial consultation and the free legal game plan. And part of that is to enlighten you about insurance coverages. And quite a few people do not realize or know or understand that when they issue get their car insurance policy issued, MedPay is automatic by statute in the minimum amount of $5,000. You can buy higher amounts, and you should buy higher amounts. But bottom line, you have a car crash. This is not an ordinary day or event for you. You have a car crash. One of the things that's going to happen if you're injured is you're going to have medical bills. And people ask us all the time, well, how do I get my medical bills paid? And MedPay can be bought in higher limits, like $25,000, $50,000, $100,000. Some companies sell $100,000. And MedPay pays your bills first. It's primary. Let's talk a little bit about what it means to be primary.
Gary, before we do that, let's go to some calls. We've got a couple calls waiting. We got Robert from Boulder. Robert, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you this morning?
Doing good. What you got going?
On that subject, though, on MedPay, do you have to list that on your federal income tax as income?
Nope.
Over with. On the Colorado revised statutes, they're constantly being reviewed, aren't they, and revised. So they should be called the Colorado Evolving Statutes, shouldn't they? Because they revised them once, so that must mean it's still in a state of evolution.
You know, Robert, when I came into this business way back when, and I'm longer than I wanted to admit, we had revised statutes, and I think we had like, the 63 or 73 edition, then we got the 83, and it seemed like every 10 years we got a new edition. But in between time, we got these pocket supplements that would talk about how the statutes were changed each year. And you know, every time that legislature goes into session, they come out with, they change the laws, they come out with new laws, they come out with things. Really, if you look at a statute, if you look at the bottom, it tells you how many times the statute's been amended or when it's come out.
So does the library get the updates, or the library has the original version that needs to be reviewed with someone intelligent?
Well, they give us these pocket parts that we put in the book to update the book, and when it finally gets so thick with all these corrections and updates, then they publish a new volume of the revised statutes.
But so that's the one the library is getting, or do they are aware of this evolving process?
Yeah, they better be, and I would think they update their statutes that they provide to the public every year.
I'm going to give them a call sometime this week about that.
You know, it's also available online.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I guess the revised edition is online all the time. Are they updating it?
And not only do they update it, but you can, you know, normally if you pull up a certain statute, you know, like 1321-101, if you pull it up, it'll talk about the revisions and it'll talk about the previous entries. But, you know, I know that I do a lot of my research on the on specialized programs or specialized internet parts for attorneys, and they talk about how it's been revised, and sometimes that's important because sometimes you want to see how the statute has evolved. It's important to be able to show what the legislative intent was. A lot of times when you get in arguments about statutes or about what the law is, that's one of the first things they ask is what the legislative intent is.
Well, many times you have a difficult situation where you have maybe conflicting state laws. For example, somebody from Texas is in Colorado, has an accident. So which law applies, Texas law or Colorado law? And then at what time period? Because sometimes the law changes. So we got a new law right now, but the accident happened a year and a half ago. So that law is going to apply in many instances to the one a year and a half ago. But it's very, very complicated, and all the laws that are passed, you know, I think I was just thinking, we're having this conversation, I think Mark Twain is the one that said the only time your property is not safe, or no, excuse me, the only time your property is safe is when the legislature is not in session.
That's right. Does this dovetail with the federal law and their changes in comparison?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I see, okay.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's something that's interesting because you know, the law is a system that evolves, and a lot of times we rely on not just what the statutes say, but about what the courts have said. And a lot of times courts are interpreting different laws. It's not rare to have a federal court ask the state court what they mean by a certain law or by a certain rule.
How about ambiguity in laws that are challenged by the wording of the statute or what's going on? Are they ambiguous ever?
Well, yeah, they're ambiguous, but that's, you know, ambiguity is the hallmark of these. You can have the argument on both sides of the fence. But Brad just made an interesting point. Sometimes your case goes to federal court. An auto accident case goes to federal court instead of state court, and that's a long explanation as to why that happens. But many times there's a new question of law in federal court. They don't know the answer because the Colorado Supreme Court has not yet given an answer on this particular point. So there was a case years ago called Erie Railroad versus Tompkins, and what it is, the law talk is they make what they call an Erie educated guess, meaning Erie Railroad versus Tompkins. So the federal court makes an Erie educated guess as to what the Colorado law would be in this example in a car crash case. It becomes quite fascinating.
Or how they'd interpret the statute. And they will ask the Supreme Court of the state of Colorado, how do you interpret the statute so we can apply it?
Another question maybe next week on this railroad crossing thing without any gates. I mean, how do you miss a train on a rural crossing? I mean, it's really hard to miss an oncoming train. You have to be unconscious or whatever. I mean, how do these people get hit with a train? It's pretty obviously a train that coming that direction. And that's crazy. They want to put a crossing gate out in some rural town that has 23 people, put in $100,000, $500,000 railroad crossing gate for people that don't obviously see an oncoming train.
Robert, maybe they're texting.
Well, they deserve it then.
Maybe they're drunk.
Maybe they deserve it then.
Robert, maybe there's a new visitor in town from Vermont, and they never seen this train or track before.
Maybe they got things going on that they're not paying attention to.
Does that mean they're going to put railroad crossings at every ambiguous crossing in Colorado or everywhere?
They can't. But let me tell you something. It's going to be a big. You try and do the best you can. People have their windows shut. They got the radio on. They're not paying attention. They got their minds in the wrong place, and next thing you know, somebody gets hurt or killed.
Or just in a big Could be in a big hurry.
Thanks for calling, Robert.
See ya.
We'll talk to you later. We're going to come back in a few minutes. We're going to talk to Ann and Steve, both online. Just hold on with us, and we'll be right back.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, and our associate attorney, Bob Leonard, is in the studio. I'm in Steamboat Springs. Brad and Bob are in Denver. We're ready to rock and roll for you. Legal talk, law talk. It's the only show of its kind. You can call us at 303-713-8255. And don't forget about our show today at 10 o'clock. That is an injury show. Every Saturday morning, 10 to 11 on KOA, 850 AM. Brad, let's go to the phones.
Ann, how you doing?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I'd like to give you a little background, if I could, real please, here.
Okay.
I believe I have been injured.
Right.
I didn't even know I could talk to an attorney about this until a friend of mine told me, within the last month, that I should call you on the radio.
Okay.
About 2 years ago, my son said to me, Mom, I really think you should look into getting a new roof. You haven't had one in 20 years. And you've had a lot of hail damage, so I did. The insurance sent out an adjuster, whatever you call him, and he went up on my roof and he said, yes, I did. A few weeks later, my grandson, who lives with me, came inside and said, Grandma, there's a young girl out here, and she's taking pictures. So I went outside, and as she was running to her car, and I mean literally running, I asked her what she was doing. And she said, well, I'm here to make sure that you don't have any trees ruining your roof so your new roof doesn't get ruined and you're okay. Everything's fine. Goodbye. A couple weeks later, I get a letter in the mail, and it's telling me my insurance carrier is going to drop me unless I paint my house, tear down a bunch of old buildings. Now, I live out on a farm.
Right.
And, okay, I painted my house. Then they wanted me to cite it. I had to cite it. Anyway, long story short, I spent $30,000.
Wow.
And all the repairs and buildings they wanted tore down.
Okay, for everybody's say information, Ann lives in Byers, right, Ann?
What?
You're out in Byers, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So, anyway, and then this is the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm having repairs done to the pool. I have an indoor concrete pool. And they want me to fill it with dirt. And I said, are you out of your mind? That's a $25,000 pool. I said, and it has an automatic cover. Are you crazy? Why would I fill it with dirt? Well, this is my insurance agent. Well, we're going to have to cancel you then, because this is the recommendation from the inspection company where the little girl was running to her car. I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to have to get a new insurance carrier. I went and got a new insurance carrier, and guess what? The same company came out and approved my property and all my outbuildings and my pool.
Same inspection company?
The same one. Now, they made me tear down a 6-foot redwood fence. I live way out in the boondocks. Nobody even comes out here. Then their demand was I had to put up a fence around the pool. I called the pool guy. I said, they want a fence put around the pool. He said, I'll just put up a construction fence like we live in Denver, where we work in Denver. We put it up to keep people out of big holes in the ground. That didn't satisfy them.
Wow.
Sounds like we need to do a TV reality show on this issue. That's an unbelievable story.
I spent $30,000 on home repairs. And then my friend tells me there's a law firm advertising on TV in Denver, but you couldn't get their name, where they actually sued a company for an elderly lady. I'm 75 years old. Now, when I say it got into my health, this had nothing to do with it. I'm almost blind. What had to do with it is now I have to be on oxygen. I nearly had a nervous breakdown, or I did have one. I spent $30,000 tearing down a fence they wanted tore down. Then money they wanted to put back up. Had to tear down old buildings. They wanted me to tear down my pump house. I said, tear down my pump house? Are you people crazy or what? That's a pump house. That's a cinder block building. They sent out a young, immature girl that did not know what a farm looks like that raises horses, cows, and sheep.
Did they give all this to you in writing? Did they
Most
make
of
this
it.
To me? You've got most of it in writing?
Most of it was on the phone. A lot of it was on the phone, secondhand, and a lot of it was in person, and a lot of it was in writing.
Okay, and here's what I want to do. I want to go down through with you, and we're going to call you this week. I want to go down through.
Okay, and I'll give you my number.
Right, you know, I'm going to leave you a number. I want to go down through with you every single thing they did, the date
and
they
I'll try
did,
to find all the different letters I had. They changed the date of the first time they notified me two different times to make the shorter. My insurance was coming due in August, and they were going to discontinue me. I had to find an insurance carrier. I mean, I was desperate. I mean, I nearly had a heart attack. My doctor believes I did have a nervous breakdown.
Well, we got to find out who's doing what and why they're doing it.
They sent a young, immature, snot-nosed kid to a farm. I've been to farms, and I've seen buildings that were in a lot worse shape than mine. And I realized I did let some things go to pot and ruin outside since my husband died 20 years ago. But I don't live outside, and I didn't have all that insured. I had my house insured. I wanted a new roof.
But when my husband and I owned, how long did you have this insurance company that sent this young, immature girl?
1970. When my husband and I owned Burger Kings, had 7 cars insured, 3 houses insured, all of our businesses insured, we never heard a thing from them. If we wanted something, the insurance company just cut us a check. But now I'm an old woman, living by myself, except for my great-grandson who lives here to take care of me. Living by myself, only have my house, a car with 270,000 miles on it that I just have liability on. And now all of a sudden, it's you do this game or we don't play.
And but I think we can help her.
Yeah, I think we can, Ann. I want you to get all your paperwork together. I'm going to call you this week, okay?
Okay.
All right, probably Monday or Tuesday. So you stay on hold and give your number to Kevin, and I'll give you a call.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. We're going to stay right with phones, Gary. We're going to go to Steve in Denver. He's got some dog issues with the neighbor. Steve, how you doing?
Oh, good morning. I'm doing all right. I have an issue. I told you about this about a year ago, and it's still going on. This person moved in to her mother's house, and it's her mother who's older. She brought 2 dogs, and they were untrained, kind of wildish. And they bark. If we go out to the alley or the other neighbors go out to the yard. And we went as far as mediation. My son, who lived back on the other side of the property on the other side of the alley on the next street, he went to that and I talked to him. He said, well, they said they're going to do this and that. And it's really not much change. Is there anything we can do to control these people or get rid of their dog? I mean, they have a doggy door. They come out. They actually put a construction-type fence closer to the house because they're not always out in a whole yard because they could jump that.
What town do you live in?
Denver.
You're in Denver. Have you reported anything to the authorities?
Oh, yeah. They went through mediation, which I don't understand what does that mean. My son said...
What do you mean by mediation?
Well, they have some kind of city has using some private organization. I don't know who they are. I'm going to find out more about this. And they said they're going to have some kind of pleading. They're going to... had to go into a court, the owner of the dog, and they plead. We don't know how they pleaded. And then in June, going to be some kind of, either they're going to find him or something. But I never understand what they could mediate on a dog barking. I mean, it's not a thing.
It sounds like they violated an ordinance. So did they find that they violated an ordinance?
Yeah, they violated the ordinance. They came out and they issued them citation or something. They paid it a couple of months ago, 14 months ago, whenever that was. And then they just nothing changing. The dogs bark anytime somebody drives by the alley. And then they're not out all the time. They come in and out because they have a doggy door. Could be at 11 o'clock at night or midnight or whatever.
Okay, Steve. Well, Denver has an ordinance with regard to nuisances by dogs. It's very specific, and you have to have two or more witnesses to verify the dog's barking.
Two people sign it, and then they're just dragging their feet. It's been on a year now.
Yeah, I remember you calling me about it a long time ago. I remember this being a problem.
I can file a civil lawsuit against them?
You know what? I can tell you one thing. We can help you either get a lawsuit filed, or we can help you get Denver moving forward to stop this. You've got neighbors who are complaining. You've gone through mediation. You've had a violation of the criminal code. You've had a violation of the ordinance, the barking dog ordinance. Bob, yeah. I don't see any reason why there shouldn't be some pressure put on the city and county of Denver, do you?
I don't either. I mean, this is unbelievable.
It looks like, Brad, that there are some behavioral issues that they can address with dogs. They can require the dog be trained.
Okay. Here's what we're going to do, Steve. We got to go to break. I want your number. And we're gonna call you, and we're gonna get this thing squared away with City County Denver, and either go to a lawsuit or see what we can do to get the dogs properly taken care of. All right, buddy. So
yes, sir.
Hang
Thank
on. Don't go anywhere. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna put you on hold. We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, we're gonna talk to both Josh and Lee. You're both on the phone. You have questions? Just hold on to this, and we'll talk to you right after the break. You listen to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We'll be right back.
Good morning. Welcome back. Here we go. Fasten your seatbelt. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You know we're injury attorneys, and you also know we bring the show to you so we can talk law on any legal subject. It's not a political show. It's a law talk show. 303-713-8255, and we'll talk law with you. And right now, we're going to talk to Eric from Catlin's.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing good, Eric. Good. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Listen, I've got some specials to run by you guys for the day. We're on our last week of these specials, so make sure you come in sometime this week and get these. That breakfast special is going to be that breakfast quesadilla I talked about last week that gets two scrambled eggs on a flour tortilla. We're going to load that up with cheddar and jack cheese. Of course, you get your choice of ham, bacon, or sausage on that one. That comes with lettuce, tomato, guacamole, sour cream on the side. You can't go wrong with a breakfast special like that. And then our lunch special is going to be the teriyaki chicken salad. Again, that is a bed of greens. We've got a grilled chicken on there. We've got some teriyaki glaze, some chow mein noodles, some pineapple, some bell pepper, some carrots, all the good stuff you need in a salad on there. Your dressing of a choice, of course, that is the teriyaki chicken salad. That is the lunch special. One more week on that. And, guys, don't forget, every Monday and Friday, we're still going strong with that all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's all-you-can-eat. It's every Monday. It's every Friday. It's from 11 to 2. It does include a non-alcoholic beverage in the price of that buffet, so definitely come down if you haven't checked that already. That's something to see. The umbrellas are something to see outside on the deck. The sky is something to see. It's beautiful weather. We've got mimosas going over here, crafts and mimosas for people that want to enjoy those in the morning. Flat screens are on. TVs are on. Sports are on. All kinds of things going on at Catlin's today, guys. Come down and check us out.
Eric, where are you located?
Guys, we're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Coldwater Boulevard, and that is the Glendale Shopping Center, guys.
I'll tell you, Eric, I almost didn't make it to the show because I thought out on that deck at Caitlin's would be a lot better than the show. But
you're going to give me a trouble, see?
I love doing this show, so I've got to figure out a way to do the show from the deck at Caitlin's.
Absolutely. We can figure that out, guys. I'd love to work on that with you, for sure.
All right.
Let's do a remote sometime.
Thanks,
Eric.
I would love it. Thanks, guys.
Talk to you later, buddy.
Okay.
You're listening.
Hey, I want to talk just a little bit a second about that last caller from Steve in Denver and the barking dogs. And, you know, the Consumer Real Estate Show follows our show, so you want to listen to that, Barry and Larry. Consumer, emphasis on consumer. So I'm going to throw out a couple of rhetorical questions, and I'm going to let Barry and Larry to answer these. I know they listen to our show. So, guys, here you go. I would have my own answer, but I'm going to throw you a softball and lob you a softball, and you can answer this when you follow our show. Question number one. Steve's going to sell his house. He's got these barking dogs next door. Many complaints have been going on for a year. Rhetorical question number one from Bell and Pollock right now. When you sell that house, when Steve sells that house, do you have to disclose that he has barking dog problem and nuisance next door, right? Do you have to disclose that in your disclosure? Colorado is a disclosure state, right, gentlemen? That's question number one that you can answer. Question number two, let's just assume, take the dogs out of the picture. Let's just assume you have a bad neighbor. and bad neighbor harasses and the neighbors all the time harasses this person. Let's say it was Steve. No dogs, no dog issue. They just give him a trouble, knock on the door all the time. Do you have to disclose when you sell that piece of property that you have a neighbor that drives you crazy, that drives you nuts? So Barry and Larry, if you listen to the show, I'm sure they're going to answer the question. Brad, what do we got?
Well, I know you just made Barry and Larry very happy. We're going to talk to Josh in Denver about a promissory note question. Josh, how you doing, man?
Good, sir. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
My wife has a trust, and we have a family member that's wanting to take a sizable loan from the trust to use as a down payment on a property that they're wanting to purchase. And the question I have is there a way to make a promissory note non-bankruptible, or would I be better off just making it a secured loan?
Secured. We'll take a vote right here, and I'm going to come out first. You make that a secured loan, and when it's a family member, those are the hardest ones to enforce. So you got to be cold-blooded when it comes time to get paid back. But I'd make it a secured loan. Bob?
It'd have to be secured.
Gary?
It has to be secured if you want to promote and enhance family harmony later.
And that's about the only way you can make it, quote, non-bankruptible. It can still be made bankruptible, but in a bankruptcy, you have a priority if the note is secured with appropriate property. You have a priority, and they won't cancel your note. You're entitled to take your security. But you've got to have it secured. And, you know, if you're doing it on something that depreciates in value, recognize it's going to depreciate. If you're doing it on something like land or a house, realize that, you know, the way you enforce the security is you foreclose on the house and you remove the people that are in the house from the house.
Is there any additional paperwork I need to fill out in order to make that, or is it just put the verbiage in the promissory note and you're good to go?
Are you doing it on real property?
Yeah, it'd be real property.
You got to do a deed of trust, and we can help you through that. We can get you the forms. We can help you through the documents, let you see what it is. My advice, once again, I'll take Bob and Gary for jumping in whenever they're ready, but my advice would be is that you need to get a deed of trust on the property. You might want to do an ownership and encumbrance or some kind of title work on the property to see how far down the line, if there's any other liens on the property or if there's any lines of credit on the property that, you know, some people nowadays, and I don't mind telling people about some of my own, I've got a line of credit on my property that is secured by a line of credit that allows me to borrow money and then pay it back and borrow money and pay it back. So on any given time, the amount of collateral my property supplies to somebody coming in after that line of credit is altered. So, you know,
Josh, did you say this was for a family member? I didn't catch that part at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a family member.
Okay, so you get a secured deed of trust. We'll help you with that. You got to put the legal description in there because we're a constructive notice state with a clerk and recorder. But let's just call this the family tough love. I'm going to get you a loan and secure it. I don't want to make the loan anyway. Deal.
Okay.
Well, they're borrowing from a trust. So and actually, Josh, are you the what's your position with the trust? Are you the trustee?
My wife is the beneficiary.
And who's the trustee of the trust?
It would be her mother.
Okay. Well, mom's
and
got...
And that's the person that we're needing to... That's the person that's wanting the loan.
Oh, so mom wants to borrow from the trust that your wife would otherwise be entitled to the money.
Then it's not 100%. It's not 100% you need a deed of trust. It's 200%.
Yeah, it's 200%, Josh. And we're more than happy. We'll take your number, and I'll make it so we can call you up and talk to you about it.
Okay.
All right. We'll get you the forms. We'll get you the documents, show you how to walk you through it, and make sure you're taken care of, man.
Perfect. Sounds good. I appreciate it.
Okay. Why don't you stay on hold? Kevin will take your number. Thank you for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. We have Lee on the line now. We're going to talk to Lee about a HOA question. And these are always fascinating when you do HOA questions. Lee, what do you got going, buddy?
Well, guys, I purchased a condominium in a building that's got about 50 units in it back in about 2013. And other than the person that was living in it at the time that their lease had a couple of months back, the only person that's ever lived in it is one of my siblings. That's the specific reason I purchased this condo. Fast forward to about the first of the year, I get a letter from the management company that tells me that we've got a tenant that's complaining about us because of cigarette smoke.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Yes. Does your sibling smoke?
Yes, she does. She smoked all her life, and that's a whole different issue. But
right.
But anyway, I called the management company that the HOA hired and talked to about it. And I made a few changes to the apartment. I sealed up the threshold of the door that goes into the common area and stuff. And I thought everything was solved. A couple of months later, I get another letter in the mail complaining about smoking on the balcony. Each unit has a private balcony. So I called them back again and talked to them about it. Of course, it's warmer then. And the lady tells me, she goes, well, you know, tell her to take the cigarettes inside. She says, we can't tell her what to do inside of her own condominium. So I find out about a couple of weeks ago that what's going on is a person bought a condo in there back in January. And I guess every single board meeting, this person's in there raising holy heck. And now the condo association has sought out legal advice because they're afraid that this person's going to sue them for not taking care of this issue, even though we don't have a smoking policy in the building.
Well, I go back to one thing, the basics, which we always talk about, are the covenants that are recorded. We had a question either last week or the week before about are they really binding, and they are binding, and as long as they're legal, what that means is they can't have like anti-discrimination provisions in the HOA covenants. So part of them can be not binding, some of them can be binding, but assuming they're binding, same question as always. You have to get down to the bottom line as to what the covenants specifically say about this issue and about smoking. What do they say? And if they don't say anything, it's a completely different legal ballgame.
Well, yeah.
There's no mention anywhere in the covenants or the rules and regulations about smoking. Now, they do have a paragraph in there about noise, about stereos and playing musical instruments and stuff. And at the very end of that paragraph, they've got a sentence in there that the HOA reserves the right to something about all nuisances. But they don't even have a covenants or an ordinance in there about smoking in the common areas, although there's probably a state or a city law.
Hey, Lee, can you hold with us over the break?
Sure.
Hold on. We want to talk to you some more. We got to go on a break right now. You're listening to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. When we come back, we're going to talk to Lee about this issue. We'll be right back.
Good morning. Welcome back. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. I'm telling you what, this is the only show of its kind. You can call us on any legal subject at 303-713-8255, 713-8255. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are there. We've written 6 books. They're there. We've written a book called Legal Game Plan. And today, at 10 o'clock in the morning, our one-hour show is on Legal Game Plan. If you don't think the insurance companies have a strategy to beat you, you're wrong. If you think you were rear-ended and it wasn't your fault and you're injured, and if you operate under the myth that surely some insurance company is going to pay me and surely they'll be fair to me, it wasn't my fault, you're going to get creamed. So you need a legal game plan, and you need to listen to our show today. That's at KOA at 10 o'clock in the morning, 8:50 a.m. Brad, we got phone calls to go.
Yeah, Lee, let's talk about your situation. Now, from what I understand, this is a unit that the smoking relative still lives there, but you people purchased the unit from her and are leasing back. Is that what the situation is?
No, we bought it from a person, but we bought it with the specific reason to give her a place to live.
Okay. And when you bought it...
I've never had a tenant in
there, okay,
except for the one that had a remaining lease when we purchased it.
When you bought it, there was no prohibition of smoking, the covenants, decks, bylaws. None of them said it was a non-smoking unit or they
absolutely
were
absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. And even they've updated the covenants since then, but there's still not even one word in the entire document about smoking.
Well, they probably can't, Lee, because what they're facing probably is a situation where, and Bob, jump in here if you think, I think they're facing a situation where they've got enough smokers in there, and now you've got non-smokers also, and you're in a situation where the non-smokers think it's a nuisance, but it's a smoking condominium units.
You know, Brad, yeah. The legislature has not picked up on that issue yet, but it looks like that it can be considered a nuisance. If the board of directors of the HOA would have to follow the same guidelines for any other nuisance.
And I don't think the board of directors would be successful. And the reason I don't think they'd be successful is probably with the number of people you have that are smoking there. Basically, what you have is you have a condominium unit. You've got all these units in it, or building. You've got all these units in it. And these people bought into a condominium association unit where smoking is permitted. And there are some that don't allow smoking in their covenants, decks, or bylaws. Now, you know, you can have an HOA decide that they're going to put in a non-smoking provision in their covenants, decks, and bylaws. But to do that, they would face huge problems unless they grandfathered in the already smokers or already units where people are smoking to allow them to continue smoking. Because this is a big issue. But the problem is for the people who are making the complaint, is they really don't have anywhere to go. And you know, when you're talking about somebody wanting to go out on their own patio, their own back patio, and smoke in a unit that's been owned for years, where they've been living for years, that they're then smoking is allowed, and in an association where smoking is not denied, I think these neighbors are going to have to start taking the hard line of understanding that there's nothing they can do. They're going to have to live with the smoke. And, you know, I'm not trying to, I just don't think there's anything the HOA can do. I don't think there's anything that people that are complaining can do. I think it's a smoking unit. I think it's a smoking HOA. And I think your person is totally okay to be smoking.
I think in this situation, it calls for a solution I like to use over the years, and that is, and it's actually stopped things dead in their tracks, and that is, your approach should be to ask a couple of simple questions in writing. And one question number one would be, who else in this whole condominium complex of about 50 people smokes, yes or no? Do they smoke, yes or no? What's their name and contact information? That's question number one. And then question number two, who is the person that is making the complaint? And usually HOAs won't give out the name, et cetera. But those two questions, I just send them off in an email or a letter or a document to the board, and let's see if it just stops it.
I think that they probably have to go to court, the person complaining about the nuisance, and prove.
And they would have the uphill battle. They'd have
a
terrible
battle. There's a nuisance.
What was that last sentence that you said that was in that provision, Lee?
Well, there was in the heading under noise, it had to do with stereos and musical instruments. They had a sentence in the last of that paragraph that says the HOA reserves the right, I don't know if it said to abate or something like that, all nuisances.
Oh.
But you know, and the thing is that I've been told by a person that lives there that was at the HOA meeting, the last one, that this person that just recently moved there that's complaining, doing all the complaining basically, told the HOA that they were endangering his health by not taken action on this.
But the problem is,
basically he's threatening the HOA that they need to do something.
The problem is the person bought into a smoking HOA.
I agree.
And the person took that under those provisions. And if there was a health problem or some reason that it wasn't supposed to be there, the person should have decided not to buy into that.
You know, Brad, it's almost smoking has become an irrational thing. People just, you know, if you're not a smoker, secondhand smoke, it's almost irrational, people's behaviors when it comes to smoking.
That's exactly it. Lee, go ahead.
Guys, I didn't bring it up with the HOA yet, but every time I go over there to visit, I see people smoking cigarettes, but what really gets me over there is the number of people smoking marijuana. The odor is so distinct and it's objectionable to me. And my feeling is if they tried to ban cigarette smoking, they'd probably have to ban marijuana smoking too.
But Lee, you said over there, when you said over there, you mean at the HOA offices?
If at the condo that my sibling lives in. because I visit there frequently. I live in Denver also.
Oh, when you say you go over there, you're talking about the whole condominium complex.
The condominium complex, yeah.
Right.
If I'm sitting out on the balcony, the private balcony, I see many people smoking on their balconies, and I also I know that people over there smoking marijuana too, but nobody's brought that up.
Well, and that's a different point, because the marijuana law, as I understand it, is you can smoke as long as that smoke doesn't infringe on other people, and there's a law that addresses that. With respect to smoking, though, you just answered my question. You see people over there smoking marijuana, smoking cigarettes, because the units allow it. And now you've got somebody who bought into units that don't allow, or that allow that, that doesn't want that to happen. Well, that's going to be a problem for them, and I doubt very much they're going to be successful, even if they go to court, to be able to stop this.
And I'm not trying to cause people problems, but it really irks me that the person that runs the management company, they basically told me that we were no longer allowed to smoke on our private balcony, that we had to take the cigarette smoking inside the unit itself, the condo unit.
Well, I'd like to see this.
They didn't put it in writing. It was a telephone call.
I'd be surprised if they did do it in writing, say you can't do it on your balcony, because it's something that's been done. I'd like to see the covenants, decks, and bylaws that they think are going to be able to stop it. Like I said, this is something that's allowed. I'll tell you what, let me get your number. There's an article I want to refer you to that I think you'll find interesting reading, that I think you need to read. And let me call you this week and give you that information, okay?
Oh, that'd be great. That'd
All right.
Be great.
Stay on hold.
All right.
Okay.
Bell and Pollock Legal Show.
I wanted to say, John, I'm sorry we didn't get to you, but we'll get to you off the air. Kevin will take your name and number. Go ahead, Gary.
Okay, great. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are there. You're listening to the show because we are your champions of the people.
And don't forget about our Sunday blog in the paper. Never post. We'll be right back.